You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome to my couch, everybody, as you always are here on Tuesdays, 12 noon Pacific Standard Time. So nice to have you. And as always, I have a most inspirational guest who is joining us. You can see her right to the side of me, Jennifer Kaufman. Welcome to my couch, Jennifer.
Thank you, Dr. Michelle. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Oh, you look lovely, and it's just a pleasure to have you. And if you have been, you know, it's not really breathing or living or reading about some of the latest, information out there in terms of inspiration, healing, and trauma, then you haven't heard of Jennifer Kaufman, but I'm sure you all have as we begin to talk about her a little bit more. And she has a new film out, and we're going to be talking to her about the film. It's called There's Got to Be More to Life. I mean, how many times have we all said that? Oh my God, there's got to be more when we're in trauma, right? And it tells the story of her recovery from being a victim of the 2013 bombing at the Boston Marathon. Who can forget that? All over the world, it was a blast. And her film presents amazing insights and about how she healed mentally and physically from the trauma. And the film also gives guidance from many well-known mentors. We'll be mentioning them in the film as well, as will Jennifer. And in all, you know, the mind, body, spirit fields. Let me just give you a formal introduction in case folks, you know, really want to get more into your writings and your work. She's a best-selling author, award-winning results coach, inspirational speaker, executive producer of Emmy Award-winning films, and trauma survivor, as I said, of the Boston Marathon bombings. Jennifer received an XP Award for executive producer in the documentary Folds of Honor. She also received a Telly Award for a producer of a Broadway show called Dream Big. You know, remember that one, guys? Did you ever see that featuring Rudy Ridiger? And Jennifer is also the recipient of 5 Firebird Award for her books as well. So with that being said, there's a lot more accolades. We could go into it, but we're going to have to take about half an hour of our show up for those. So we'll just jump on into it. So nice to have you here again, Jennifer.
Oh, thank you. And I got to say, you know, the accolades weren't always that way. You know, that is the miracle of what we teach about in the film, actually, and in that it's possible for every person who's experienced trauma to rise up and thrive.
Yes, it's beautiful. And that's what it's all about. And there are so many different ways and presenters, experts, specialists who you really present on the show who are just wonderful in the way that they help others heal from all sorts of trauma. Speaking about which, we can talk maybe about the driving forces that helped you create this film and perhaps talk a little bit about your journey and what you suffered back on, what was it, April 15th? Wow.
Yeah, you know, I had never been to the marathon before. I born and raised just outside of Boston. I went to undergrad, grad school in Boston and worked in the city for years. And I never had a desire to go to the marathon, really. I grew up playing sports, but my idea of running was behind a white ball, soccer ball, softball, volleyball, right? But this year, this particular year back in 2013, a very dear friend of mine asked me if I'd go. Her son was running for the first time. And because I know my way around Boston so well, I said, sure, I would do that. So, you know, that was how it actually started. I was there, you know, helping celebrate my friend's son for the first time running. And here's the irony. I woke up that morning feeling very unsettled, but I didn't understand why. But I had like I woke up, I settled, and I just had this, like, I don't want to go into Boston today. Now I love the city, you know, I worked and went to university there, so I didn't understand it.
Wow, that's amazing.
I didn't understand it. And so, but I just, you know, I made a commitment. I wanted to honor my commitment. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the day started out, you know, near the start line, And I was in awe.
Wow.
Actually in awe seeing all these people, you know, running by and, you know, with such commitment and such energy.
Yes. I mean, just amazing. You know, yeah. Boston, yeah, it's an amazing city, isn't it? I mean, the that is a really tightly knit city of yeah.
Yeah. And it was just like, I was like, I never, you know, I mean, I love professional sports. So I've been to professional sporting arenas and you know, you've got the electricity of the crowd. This was even more. And the people were just lining the streets for 26.2 miles. I was like, I had no idea.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So you were there, you saw the excitement, but you had, you know, you obviously have a good intuition. You were just not feeling, you didn't know what it was quite, but you were there and supporting your friends and son. And so then how did it unfold? How long were you there and how close were you to the blast when it went off?
So we made a day of it. So we started out about a mile from the start line and literally waited for my friend's son to come running by. So we were there for all morning, basically. Wow. And then we ventured into Boston, had lunch, and then from there we went to the finish line. And we got to the finish line, and you, just imagine, right? So just the streets of Boston, and the sidewalks are all blocked off, so you're packed in like sardines.
Yes, yes.
And we ended up, I didn't know this until later because they retrieved my phone. I ended up being about 15 feet from the first explosion.
Oh, Jennifer. Oh, wow. So what injuries did you sustain mentally and physically?
So physically, I had a lot of spinal injuries. I had, so I was wearing a camera with a big lens. And when the blast went off, I was thrown into the barricade, which had a cement barricade. So I had a lot of internal injuries, a lot of swelling, and I mean, I couldn't walk normal for 5 months. I couldn't eat, you know, the things that we take for granted were a struggle for me in the beginning. A lot of inflammation.
Yes.
I had, you know, a minor form of a traumatic brain injury from the blast.
Sure.
It was close.
Yes.
And life in an instant, as I knew it, was over. Actually. Yeah. And there's a lot that I remember about that day, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to traumatize any of the viewers here, but you know, it's surreal, actually.
Yes. It is surreal, isn't it?
It is surreal. You know, when it happened, I honestly thought I was instantly put into a horror movie.
Wow.
And it didn't seem real.
Right.
And there's bloodshed everywhere, people screaming. It was complete terror.
Right.
And you're like, how did this happen? Because literally seconds before, people are happy-go-lucky, cheering, excited. You know, my friend's son was in the home stretch of the finish line. We were monitoring him. And he was about a half mile out when the blast went off.
Yes.
And what I remember distinctively was the crowds were cheering, the music was blaring, the announcers were announcing. And then when the blast went off, all I heard for a moment was the shattered glass from the building behind. And then in a matter of, it might have been a second or two, I don't know. But, and then all of a sudden the crowd erupted into screams. Mm-hmm. And so, you know.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But I didn't know I was injured at that time because you just, adrenaline kicks in, right? You're just like, oh my gosh, what just happened to me? And you know, I find myself laying on the ground and I'm looking around going,
right.
You know, and at first I thought it was a gas explosion. Because it felt like it came
perhaps.
From out of the building. I didn't know. I didn't know. And, you know, I realized by the time the second explosion went off that, okay, this is some form of a terrorist attack.
Yes.
And, but we ended up fleeing the scene. We walked for 45 minutes. I wasn't aware that I was injured. The only thing I was present to at the time is I had, my left ear was in excruciating pain.
Right.
I now understand it was from the blast. I was so close to the blast.
Sure.
But it was until about 45 minutes later that I realized something seriously was wrong. And then I was, you know, rushed into the ER and, that also was a pretty traumatic experience.
Yes, absolutely.
And I say that with the utmost respect for the doctors and nurses, because I'm so grateful.
Yes.
Because they saved so many lives that day.
Oh my gosh, yes.
But imagine, you know, you're still processing all that happened.
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure out what's wrong with you. And it was pretty
oh my God. That is part of the trauma as well. It's, you know, trying to be present. And because you're in cognitive dissonance. I mean, your brain is like, it's not even making sense. You're totally confused. You're trying to make it right. But at the same time, what our brain does is we go into first denial. And, you know, because it's so hard to cope. Mm-hmm. And so we shove it down. And we'll be talking a little bit about that as well, that you present in your film, about how we shove trauma and feelings down from any kind of trauma, anything like that we experience, whether it's from our childhood or, you know, any, of course, being a war veteran, who those beautiful souls that you present in your film, who you're speaking to as well about their experiences, talking about the trauma and just letting it out and feeling it. By the way, guys, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. That's me. My special guest is Jennifer Kaufman. She's amazing. And we're talking about her latest film, There's Got to Be More to Life. Now, if you guys are into, my audience is so familiar with my work, what I present and what I talk about, and what I've talked about on the Discovery Channel and Inside Edition and ET and, you know, all the other programs, helping people understand other people and reading what they're saying and helping them communicate better and get out their feelings about their suffering. And this film shares so many experiences presented by Jennifer that she went through to learn how to heal, you know, with the help of others who are amazing, but also talking and working physically, and we can heal within. And this is another big point. Jennifer and I, you were talking with me about, you know, what did I get from the film at the beginning of the show? And I want to tell you, the brilliant feeling and the freedom that we can heal ourselves with the help of the doctors, with the help of the medical community, of course, but the power that we have within us, the light we can find within us to heal that is really brought out in the film, which I so appreciate. That was amazing. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Really. So let's talk about your journey of healing. You present, like I said, so many wonderful people in there. And I'd like to talk about some of the things that you found to be most profound for you in your healing. What was super helpful for you within yourself?
So I actually want to say something first before I actually answer the question. I want your viewers to understand that I do not have a medical background.
Sure.
When this happened, I had the business background, you know, and I owned and operated my own business. So when I was in the hospital, when I was in the ER, there was a brief moment where there was a little bit of calmness in the room. And I heard a soft voice in my head that said I needed to learn how to heal naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, heal naturally? I have no idea how to do that.
Right. Sure. Exactly.
And yet there was something about that inner voice that was compelling.
Yes.
And I had an experience in the ER where I was injected with some dye to see whether or not I had internal bleeding. And I got really, I had a lot of adverse side effects from that. And so it made my decision easier towards the end of that evening. It's like I had a choice. I can stay and there's nothing wrong. You know, everybody has to follow their heart. I want people to understand that you've got to trust your own instincts. But for me, it was heeding that inner voice. It was trusting myself to go on this journey that I had no idea how to do. So, and I also had this, you know, asked myself this question, if this were my last day, because I honestly didn't know if it was or wasn't. You know, the doctors were talking like I was, you know, my heart rate was off the charts and all this stuff was happening. And I'm like, you know, they think I'm having a heart attack and I'm 42 years old, you know. I can't comprehend this. So I'm thinking to myself, if this is my last day, is this where I want to spend it? And the answer for me was no.
Right. Good for you.
So that was the impetus, candidly, to discharge myself from the hospital in the care of my aunt, who was a nurse practitioner at the time, and not knowing what was going to happen next. And here's what I want your listeners to understand, is that it only takes one step. Just that one step, leaning in that one step. Here's the amazing thing that happened was, when I took that one step, you know, it was a couple of days later, a really dear friend of mine, who's actually featured in the film, her name is Charisse.
Yes.
Reached out to me and said, you know, I know you're in so much pain. I think you would benefit from a chiropractor. Now, I had been to a chiropractor before, but yes. Prior to that, it was all manual adjustments. And wow. I knew I was in so much pain. There's no way I could do that. And I said, Charisse, I can't. She's like, sure. Would you answer Christina Scott, who's featured in the film? Yes. She's a dear friend of mine. About this gentle way of manipulating the spine, which was, and this woman was extraordinary. She saw me 5 days a week in the beginning.
Yes.
And that was one step, right? So, you know, chiropractic care was the beginning. Nutrition in the beginning, I couldn't eat because of all the different inflammation and swelling that I had. So I was a nutritionist and I was put on whole food supplements and mostly liquid-based diet just to get some nutrients inside of me. So that led me down understanding, you know, plant-based nutrition, understanding, you know, that there's holistic ways that we can, you know, nourish our body. And nutrition became a factor, acupuncture to manage pain. Now I will tell you that prior to the bombings, I thought acupuncture was woo-woo.
Really? Yeah. Well, a lot of people do. You know, I hear you.
I did. Yeah. And yet I was drawn in because of, I knew it would help manage the pain. So I trusted my instincts.
Right.
I met an amazing, doctor who, you know, studied Chinese medicine. And he was a great acupuncturist and herbalist.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, so it's fascinating because when you're on the brink of you know, something so traumatic like that, I found myself being more open to trying things.
Yes.
You know, and so that was the initial part of the journey. I then later, meditation was always something I had done prior. I had been doing that for years.
Sure.
But now I started incorporating sound meditation. So I did a lot of sound therapy, biofield tuning, which we talk about in the film. So that was the core.
Yes.
That was the core. I did some EMDR. I did some traditional talk therapy, all of that stuff in the beginning.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, what I love is the fact that you kept pursuing, you kept really trying all these different methods and you really believed in them. And you had a lot of support from some amazing people. So we could talk about some of those people as well, which would be awesome. I love what Dr. Sue Mortar was talking about. You know, she's the bioenergetic medicine woman. What an incredible spiritual lady. And I just love what she had to say about meditation. And you talk about doing that every morning, you know. And so maybe we chat a little bit about what that does for the body and the brain and how that really heals us and how that healed you as well.
Yeah. So meditation, especially sound meditation, right? Now, there's all different kinds of meditation, and I honestly love them all. And people have to find what really resonates and works for them. And I want you to understand, meditation in the beginning was very difficult for me. I had what called monkey brain, you know, and I had been meditating probably 10 years prior to when the bombings happened. So meditation wasn't easy for me in the beginning. But, you know, because I had experience with it, obviously, after the bombings happened. But what it does is that it slows everything down. It decelerates the brain and gets the brain into, you know, delta and theta levels of, you know, which basically puts your body into this, like, you know, this like rest and relaxation piece. It's like a reset.
It is. It really is.
And as a result, oftentimes, especially somebody who's dealing with trauma, Mm-hmm. Right? Especially if somebody who's dealing with trauma, they often have flashbacks, they have racing thoughts, they have anxiety, they have worry, you know, all these things come up, which is natural.
Yes.
Meditation, I found, especially with consistency in my practice, is that it just kind of dissolves that stuff.
Yeah. Yes, it really does.
Now, it doesn't mean I don't experience it, because, you know, making this film, I experienced anxiety, I experienced some fear, I experienced trepidation, because I'm doing something new.
Right. Right. Exactly.
And so, but I know that, okay, sometimes I just meditate a little bit extra in a day to get myself back to that reset mode.
Yes. Yeah. Beautiful. I love that. Thanks for sharing that. It is. There really is something. And, you feature Bruce Lipton in the film as well. And he's all about the proponent, you know, of the meditation and how it resets and the theta, even the alpha and the theta and the, you know, brainwaves and, you know, getting down deep in order to reset ourselves from the monkey brain and, you know, the constant stream of consciousness in our beta world, which we're always processing and doing, you know, being, and I think, you know, also in the film, what I really appreciated is the message that we are all coming back to that because of the changes in our world, especially due to COVID right now. And it's a universal consciousness of wave. And so this is why your film is perfect right now. We all need to heal. And this has been and is traumatic for us all. So now I just wanted to say that. Yeah.
COVID actually, you know, I actually know people that have been on both sides of the spectrum,
yes.
Really fearful, really terrified, you know, losing loved ones, right. Losing jobs, all of that, you know, and then I've known other people that have been in this really peaceful, blissful state. And so what I've come to understand is we're at choice.
Yes. Yes.
We're at choice and we create our realities. And it's like, what does that mean? I didn't fully understand that prior to bombings.
Yes.
But now I do. It's like, you know, I can choose at any moment what I want to experience. Now, you know, a lot of people don't want to feel fear. And it's like when we face it and allow ourselves just to feel it, you know, Christy Whitman actually talks about in the film that if we sit with our emotions for 90 seconds and just allow that wave to come up, and actually Eileen McCusick speaks about it too. You know, everything is energy, right? Mm-hmm. Emotions are energy. When we allow that to come up and just kind of crest through us, it dissipates. But what we often do as human beings is we stop it.
Yes.
Like, because it's like, you know, like sometimes for me, it takes my breath away. Sometimes I'm sobbing so much I can't even, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But when we can just allow it to come up and out, what's on the other side of that, for me and my experience, is just like this tremendous peace and bliss, actually. But if I allow myself to ride that wave, which isn't easy and it's not comfortable, even now it's not comfortable.
Sure, of course it isn't. You know, who wants pain? Who wants reliving the physical pain? And of course, the emotional pain of the sadness of those who have suffered and or passed away. And, you know, so I mean, it really is to hold on to that whole feeling. Yeah, Christy Whitman talks about that and just being able to go with it, allow it to come out. And you're right. It also, you know, releases chemicals in the brain, which are self-soothing. Once we get into the rhythm of just letting go, the same chemicals that are released when we're meditating, you know, that's what we're experiencing, is that just letting go, getting away from our fears, getting outside of that. And that's what you bring out in the film, which is just brilliant. By the way, I'm talking with Jennifer Kaufman. She's an award-winning author, a motivational speaker, award-winning filmmaker. And she's, of course, presenting to us her latest film, There's Got to Be More to Life, which is all about her journey to healing as being a, and I hate to say the word victim, because I don't like that word. But I mean, in just describing being a victim and suffering mental and severe physical trauma from being, like you said, about 15 feet away from the bombings. My goodness, girl. And the journey that she went on to heal, to become who she is today, to present the healing to you all in this film. And we'll also be talking a little bit about how you can find the film and watch it for yourselves, because it's very inspiring, and you'll be crying. I was, oh God, she's so right. You know, I was right along with her on all those points, and the inspirational people as well. So, So also there were some other things in the film that fascinated me, some presentations of the people who are channelers. Now, we've had some channelers on our show before, and blew me away because, I just, the messages that both of the women were giving were just amazing. They were coming from somewhere, they're channeling from a higher entity or whatever, but they're allowing themselves to tune into that. Mm-hmm. So in terms of getting information about channeling, what was your experience from being with these women who were bringing these wonderful messages to you?
So just so you understand, channeling is fairly new for me. That was something that, I was raised that was kind of, again, pretty far out there. And I was drawn to work with Christy Whitman. It was actually January 2020, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Wow. And I was drawn to work with her. Actually, was it? It was either 2020 or 2019, but within the last year and a half, 2 years. And then that's how I met Christina Hill. And what I experienced was, I've always had this notion, Dr. Michelle, that there's got to be a way to experience heaven on earth. I'm like, why do we, like, I was growing up, having gone, being raised a combination of Catholic and Protestant, it was kind of like, I kept hearing, you have to die to experience heaven. I'm like, why is that? And so I've been on this thing of like, really? No, and so my whole life I've been in seeking, like, how do we create heaven on earth? And so anyways, to come back to the channeling piece is that I started to connect with these women and then connect with the people that they, the spirits that they channel.
Yes.
And I had a deeper sense of we can access higher realms of reality and experience what I perceive to call heaven on earth. And it's like this blissful, peaceful state. Mm. That can happen. It can coexist.
Yes.
Even in the midst of a pandemic, even in the midst of a war, even in the midst of somebody having a serious illness. And I know that sounds far out, but I've experienced it.
Yeah.
And as somebody who was a non-believer before and the biggest skeptic there is, I'm telling you, it's possible because I've experienced it myself.
Yes.
And so being in their presence. So for me, here's the thing. I had been in their presence remotely, like via Zoom, basically, and via phone calls. But when I interviewed them, I was actually in person.
Yeah.
And it's like somebody just stuck the energy frequency dial up on high. And it's just like this blissful, energetic experience, which I found to be really healing.
Yes.
So that's one of the things in the film. Just by watching the film, people will experience an energetic healing.
Yes. That's right. I agree. I think that is something that I, again, got from the feeling of the film. Because the guest presenters, specialists that you have are so compelling, I think a lot of people will just be drawn into, I just wanted to keep watching. Now who's presenting what? What is she talking about here? And what can I learn from this? And so many beautiful lessons, So thank you for sharing that. I also loved Reggie Walker. Oh God, what a beauty. The NFL linebacker. He used to, and he was talking about his anger. And he was talking about how he sort of worked through that and used that. And when he just sort of gave up and forgave a lot of the people who had hurt him in his life. So he was so cute. And so I'd like to talk about forgiveness, and I want to talk about you. And I mean, I was just, again, blown away by your story of how you had to face the surviving bomber in court. He would not look into your eyes until one moment. Maybe you can share that with us.
Yeah, and that moment was, so that particular day, I was one of 27 people that read the victim impact statement. And mine was 6 pages long. And at the very end of it, it was about a paragraph. And I said, despite all of, you know, the harm that you caused me, my family, my loved ones, all of the survivors and victims of that experience, I'm choosing to forgive you and your brother for what you did. Now, you have to understand that was not an easy thing for me to do. I wrestled with that for months. So we were presented with an opportunity. The prosecution team had said, hey, you know, we really want as many of you to write your victim impact statement. And if you feel drawn to, speak it out loud in court. And I thought to myself, why would I do that? Why would I do that? Why would I want to relive it? I'm trying to get away from it, right? I'm trying to rise up from it.
Yes.
But what I realized, something kept drawing me back. It took me 2.5 months to write my impact statement, because you look at every facet of your life, which was painful for me. And it was healing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There is therapy in that.
And it was healing because it was just like you had to face that and you had to work. I had to work through all the emotions of that. So anyways, here's really what got me. At the time that I was giving this opportunity, I was experiencing some really, really profound rage.
Okay. Yeah.
And it wasn't anger. I mean, it was rage. Right. And I didn't know who I was. I'm like, you know, I'll quickly share with you this story. I was leaving a survivor meeting, a survivor group meeting. A group of us had met at one of the Boston hospitals and was facilitated by doctors and psychologists and psychiatrists. And I had left this support group this one night. And I'm, you know, like I said, born and raised in just outside of Boston.
Right.
In Boston, we cut people off. It's just what we do. Right. and we don't think anything of it if we're there. So this particular night, I'm driving home. And this truck cut me off. And I instantly went into road rage.
Right.
I started chasing this truck. I started beeping the horn. I was saying things that my mom would, you know, be horrified about. I was just enraged. Now, the traffic light saved me because he or she made the light. I didn't.
Right. Right.
And when I stopped, I started sobbing, crying.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Who is this person?
Sure.
And in that moment, I realized if I don't get a hold of my rage, I realized that if I acted out on it, I'm no different than the terrorist. Right. I'm no different than those two young men that placed those bombs.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my gosh. And so that led me on a journey to heal the terrorist that lived inside of me.
Mm. Yes.
Now I never, you know, that was, my life was good before the bombings happened. And then my world completely was shattered. And so anyways, I go on this journey. So at the time I'm like wrestling with this. Do I forgive? Do I not forgive? And I thought if I forgive, then I'm silently telling them it's okay. And it wasn't okay.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Right.
But the more I had rage, I had experiences of setback in my physical and mental well-being. So here, it was like I took one step forward in my healing recovery. Then when the rage came through, I was struggling to be with it, to deal with it, to manage it, frankly. And then I got more mad because I couldn't handle it. Does that make sense? So it was just like I was literally poisoning myself.
Right, right.
And I realized, you know, of course, this was over the course of months. And I realized this isn't working. There's got to be a better way. And that better way actually was, and for me, this was a pivotal moment. I have a niece that looks very much like me. And so I would say, if Megan were going through this, aww, what would I do for her? Would I be yelling at her? Would I be, you know, like, how come you can't, you know, overcome your rage? No, I would not treat her that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would console her. I would love her. I would just be like, I would listen to her. Mm-hmm. So I started taking the advice that I would give to my young niece at the time.
Yes.
Which was an act of self-love, candidly.
Yes.
That led me to get to a place where I could forgive. Now, I'm not going to lie.
Yes.
I had trepidation going into court that day.
Sure you did. My gosh.
You know, I just had trepidation. And so, and yet there was something calling me forth and to lean in.
Yes.
If you had said to me that I would experience peace and actually have compassion for that young man and his brother, I would have said, you're crazy.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it's tough.
And yet that was my experience. Right. I read my impact statement. I was, you know, the second to last to read my impact statement. Right. Most everyone before me expressed their, you know, their rage towards him. And I totally get it because I was there myself.
Sure.
And when I said those words, I choose to forgive you and your brother, we shared eye contact for a brief moment. And that is when I experienced this overwhelming amount of peace in my body. I can't quite articulate it into words,
sure,
but there's just this rush of peace.
Yeah.
And the next thing was I actually had authentic compassion. I hated these two young men. I actually used to silently think about how I would kill them with my bare hands.
Sure. And that's normal. Yeah. I mean, amazing transformation. Was the forgiveness while you were reading your impact statement, was it spontaneous? Did it come spontaneous? So you had some trepidation, and then did it just come forth out? It was like, where did that come from? But did it flow out of you?
No. So when I got up, now listen, my mom will tell you I was born talking, right? And I came out of the womb talking, and yet here I am, and I am crying through my 5.5-page victim. I'm like, you know, I had all I could to get through it. And here's the thing. When I got to the last paragraph, I paused. Do I say this out loud? Or do I not? And I was actually really nervous to do that. Mm-hmm. How are people going to judge me? How am I going to be perceived? I was, you know, all of those kind of inner thoughts, like, you know, and there was this nudge. Just do it.
Yes.
And so my voice softened. I didn't have a powerful voice and, you know, I softened, but I said the words. But no, did it come easily? No, it didn't. And looking back on it, I'm so grateful I did it.
Yes. Yes.
Because honestly, I wouldn't be here before you today. I'm sure I would have taken my life.
Oh, my dear. Oh, my dear. And that's the transition that everybody really has to hear, I think, in healing from any kind of trauma is, and it is, like you said, it's probably one of the most difficult things we have to do besides healing physically and mentally, but I mean, and the journey to get there. But I think that going to forgiveness is huge because not only that frees you, that heals you so much quicker. Because when we, as you point out in the film, excuse me, I've been talking like you said too much already today, but when we get to that point of really healing, that is the forgiveness part. You know, it's interesting because Dr. Kubler-Ross, you know, in recovery from trauma, recovery from loss, you know, they have the DABDA thing and the denial and anger and all those stages we go through. She never put in there forgiveness of yourself, survivor's guilt. I'm sure you experienced that.
I did.
Forgiveness of the others who caused the trauma. I mean, that is clearing and cleansing. And what you set forth in that courtroom the energy that you put forth really inspired a lot of people as well, I'm sure.
It has inspired a lot of people, and it has also brought up for people, how could you? And unless you, it's like this, unless you have your own experience, it's not an easy thing to do. It's actually one of the most difficult things I did do, aside from learning how to heal and rise up from trauma. But yes. I want your viewers to understand, you know, that experience was not my first trauma. I actually had childhood trauma. I had trauma as a young adult. And here's what I didn't understand. But Dr. Bessel, you know, van der Kolk actually talks about the body keeps score. It's true. My experience is that, so right after the bombings happened, I not only had flashbacks of the bombings, you know, I barely slept for months because every time I'd close my eyes and just start to, you know, I would have a flashback. But what got worse was I started having flashbacks not only of the bombings, I started having them from my childhood traumas that were unresolved. I thought I was going mad.
Yes, I hear you.
And I think that's what, you know, a lot of our veterans coming back from war, you know, are dealing with, is that a brain is doing a loop and you feel out of control. You feel like,
absolutely.
What I didn't understand was there were all these invisible triggers. Like smell, the wind could go a certain way and my body remembered, oh wait, that's how it felt the day of the bombs.
Yes.
A certain smell, a certain word, a certain tone would be a trigger for me. But I was like, where is that coming from? Why am I having all of this? I felt out of control.
Right.
But through the different, you know, the key thing was, you know, nutrition and meditation and basically reducing the inflammation of my body and basically working through all of that, that I've been able to, you know, heal my triggers.
Yes. And
that's a process. It takes time.
Oh my gosh, it does. And good for you for sharing all those things with us. You know, we do. We have, even early in childhood, from our environment, whatever that may be, and along our journey, trauma as an adolescent and, you know, young adult, middle-aged adult, whatever. We do. We have these neural patterns and clusters that say trauma, what's that? And a lot of it's been shoved down, but like you said, some of these triggers of sensation, whatever it is, audio, visual, it's the air, the fragrance, that these are all, you know, these are imprinted neural patterns that go to those clusters that say danger, danger. And okay, get ready for that. And it's beautiful. Our human bodies are amazing because the old brain is fight or flight, and that's what it does. But it stores these memories for us to bring up again and again. And as you point out in the film, which I loved, is life is happening for us, not to us, right?
That was a new perspective for me. So here's the irony. Up until the bombings happened, I was 42 when they happened. I was running from my trauma.
Oh yeah.
I was, you know, looking outside of myself. I was quite successful in the corporate world. I left the corporate world to start my own business. I had success. In fact, I talk about it in the film. I had my best year in business in 2012 leading up to all of this.
Right.
But I wasn't fulfilled.
Right. Sure.
I wasn't happy. Sure. It's not that I wasn't completely happy, but I wasn't fulfilled. I was like, what's missing? I was missing for me. I was running from my past, running from my trauma. And it took the bombings at the marathon to stop me dead in my tracks and to face all of that, to work through the pain, to work through all of that so that I could get to this place. And I'm telling you, pinch me now, because I can't even believe I'm sitting here before you today telling you that I now, you know, directed my very first film. I've produced two other Mission for Good films before. I've received several awards. I've written three books, including a kid's book with my nieces, all about hashtag Be Courageous. And it's dealing with kids, you know, who've gone through trauma and rewriting their stories so that they can see the wisdom in it. So I had, but before the bombings happened,
yes,
I had this perspective, like inner perspective. You know, I didn't project this outwardly, but inwardly, I was just like, what's wrong with me? Why did these bad things keep happening to me? I'm a good person. I'm a law-abiding citizen. Yes. I don't understand.
Yes.
Why is it happening? Why is it happening to me?
Right. Why me, God?
Why me? Exactly. And I was like, and so I would always look good and look the part, make it, everybody else think like I had myself together when I really didn't on the inside.
Sure.
But the irony is that, and this happened over time. This did not happen right after the bombings. This took a few years for me to realize, what if trauma is actually a gift for us? What if trauma is like the manure that they put on crops and seeds to grow?
Yes. Yes.
And all of a sudden I had this awareness like, wow, what if life is happening for us?
Yes.
That was empowering to me. I was like, huh. Yes. It got me curious. It got me thinking like, if life is happening for me,
yes.
What if this is meant to help me blossom? What if this has helped me to be my best version of myself? What if this is sending me on a path to lead to my own purpose and my own fulfillment?
Yes.
And look what it's done.
Yes, absolutely. Look what you have done for others in presenting this film. And, you know, we are coming up to a hard break in just a little bit, but I wanted to, you know, share with others the film, by the way, you got to get it. And it's called There's Got to Be More to Life. And so many inspirational speakers in there. And of course, my guest director of the film and best-selling author, filmmaker, award-winning Emmy, leader of so many inspirational groups, Jennifer Kaufman. What is the best way people can get a hold of your film and watch it?
So you can go to movies.influencer.me, and influencer is spelled INFLEURNCR, and we can send you the link, but it's movies.influencer.me. It's our own portal and people can access it. We've got free gifts there and we're going to be offering some promotional and bonus material coming into the holiday season. We've even created a gift program. So those that feel that are inspired by the film, they can gift it to others for the holidays. Mm-hmm. So we really want to share the love of transformation.
Oh, it's perfect. Beautifully said. And that's what it's all about. And we are coming into a new year of transformation too. So if you want to be inspired, please get the film, folks. And we'll have it up in the archives here. If you want to watch the show, of course, you can do so. You know, on my webpage here at the station and also on Facebook Live, LA Talk Radio. Jennifer, you're amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. What a lot of things I learned today. Appreciation, so much appreciation for you.
Dr. Michelle, it's an honor and a privilege. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, it's great. Thanks for all you do for everyone else.
Appreciate it.
Take care now. All right, everybody, that's it. You're still welcome to stay here on the couch, and there's more great shows coming up. Until next Tuesday, have a wonderful week. And as I always say, do take care of yourselves first, and then you'll be great for others. And that's the way it works in the world. Have a good one. Bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle. Right here on LA Talk Radio.